This is the Transition Podcast, where former NBA star Rashad McCants explores current events while interviewing entertainers, entrepreneurs, and experts, all the while uncovering the secrets to how they have transitioned in life from normal to extraordinary, or from a man to a god. Here's your host, Rashad McCants.
What's up, everybody? And we're back. And this is the Transition Podcast, Man to God. And I'm your host, Mr. Rashad McCants. And I'm here to let y'all know I got another special guest today. And all of my special guests, as you all know, are ecstatic, excited, and ambitious to be here to talk about what they have going on, the testimonies, the transitions in life, and also the expertise. A lot of the guests that I have are experts in their fields. And today we have another special guest, which is a friend of mine, also a personal barber, Mr. James Gasson out of Las Vegas, Nevada, but also originally from California, Los Angeles. And for James, you can unmute yourself on the mic. And I want to let him know that I appreciate him coming on the show and everything that's going on right now in terms of the world and society. For somebody to have time to come on the show and spit some real stuff is also commendable. I want to introduce James to everybody and let him talk about his background, how he got into being a barber, and what makes it so special for men's grooming.
What's happening? My name is James from the Killer, California. Just here supporting my boy Rashad, man. We do a lot of talking. We do a lot of talk. We talk about everything. Real stuff. Real man stuff too.
Real talk. So tell them about where you started the passion for barbering and being able to cut hair.
Well, you know, I'm old. I was born in the 70s. I grew up in the 80s. I grew up with the birth of hip hop. Me looking at dudes like Big Daddy Kane and all these East Coast rappers with their flat tops, and something inside of me, I understood what I was looking at from the jump. I can't explain it, but I just understood what I was looking at. Something told me I could do that.
Right.
And being much into hip hop culture, we was getting our haircuts from my grandfather. And we tearing that stuff out and we crying and fussing. My grandma one day came in the house, threw a pair of clippers on the bed and said, "Do it yourself. You ain't got to complain no more." And that was my blessing, man. And ever since then, I just been getting it in, man. I can't see myself doing anything else. I really love what I do. I really have a strong passion for what I do. Right. I love the relationship I build with people. I love the conversations we have. I love the camaraderie in the barbershop. I love the freedom I have, being able to connect to people, being able to see what a haircut can do for somebody.
Wow.
It goes a long way. During the pandemic, it made it very clear to me during the pandemic how important grooming is to the average person, even to the people that don't really think about it. But during that pandemic, when everybody was on lockdown, the one thing I noticed on social media was everybody was looking for their barber.
Yep.
No matter what was going on, they was looking for their barber. They weren't looking for no cure for that damn COVID. They was looking to get a haircut.
And if you think about that part, why is everybody looking for a barber? Because social media became the forefront of their existence, and their appearance is now the most important thing. I got to get a haircut because I ain't going nowhere and nobody going to see me physically. I can manipulate the way I look.
I'm already going, man.
And I just need a good cut for that.
Absolutely. It's a big deal, man. I actually appreciate the love I get being a barber. Just in casual conversation, meeting somebody, I could walk up to a stranger in the street and get to talking, and they'll look at me crazy as ever until I say, "Well, I'm a barber, I cut hair." Then the whole dynamic changes.
Oh, man.
Those are things I've recognized over the years. I have a great appreciation for what I do.
Let's talk about the hip hop culture, the style, like you said, the Big Daddy Kanes, the high top fades, the house parties, crisscross, being able to etch names in the back of the heads and pictures and all that kind of stuff. Talk about that culture and how it was influential to cutting hair, because I think as we were growing up, as kids coming up, that was a fresh cut, take you a long way. with the girls. Even in school, when you're looking at the teachers looking at you a certain way, Absolutely. You don't look dusty. You don't Absolutely. Look like a hoodlum. You don't look Absolutely. Like you're groomed fairly well. And you get a different, you know what I'm saying? You get a different vibe. You get a different you're approach right. from people.
No, you're right. Well, us black folks, we got a different swag going on. Our grooming has a lot to do with that. I was raised with my grandparents, my grandfather and my grandma. They was very old fashioned. So I was raised in an old fashioned lifestyle. And one thing my grandfather used to always tell us when we was young was, well, as black men, we have to represent ourselves a little bit different than everybody else when we're out in public. It was very important for us to always look the part, always look clean, always dress nice. That's something that he instilled in me that stuck with me. Although at the time I wasn't paying attention to him. I'm just a little young, cool, swagged out little Negro thinking I'm cool as shit. But then as I got older, matured a little bit more, learned some things, got a little bit more awareness and consciousness, I started to understand what my grandfather actually was meaning by saying that. It's very important to us as black men and how we represent ourselves more than everybody else because of how much is being thrown out there about us, right. all the negatives. We are battling up against a lot when it comes to just a simple grooming.
And that's big when you talk about perception in the world.
Absolutely.
And getting into the whole barber conversation about the craft of it. There's right. also a certain craft behind being Absolutely. A barber outside of being outgoing and outspoken, being able to have conversations with your customers, but right. being sharp, being Absolutely. Being a good barber. Talk about what it takes to get that experience on your first couple haircuts. And then for me, because my mom was 35 years in cosmetology and she worked in barbershops. Gotcha. I got firsthand understanding of not only how to cut my hair, how to cut other people's hairs, but that feeling when you actually cut someone's hair, how it makes me feel as a barber that I did a job that I was supposed to do. But then there's not always a success story behind it. There's also, man, I messed that man's hair up. Oh, man, I messed his hairline up. talk about that.
Let me put it this way. God bless me with a talent. I can't explain how I'm able to do what I do. My instructor in barber school, one thing he said to me that really stuck, and I always repeat this too to other barbers and new barbers, is he says you have to practice your barber eye. So what you see is what other people are not going to be able to see.
Ooh, okay.
Like, I've been doing this long now that I can see the haircut before I cut it.
Right.
I actually see the lines and see the fade before I even touch his head. I believe that's a skill I acquired over the years of cutting for so long. It is a practice makes perfect. It becomes robotic. It's almost like being able to do with your eyes closed just because I've been doing it for so long. It's really paying attention to what you are doing. Knowing your equipment, knowing what your equipment can do and cannot do. It's just like in construction, you are only worth your equipment. The better equipment you have, the more skilled you are with the equipment, the better off you're going to be.
Is it safe to say, like, just like any other industry where you have to hone in on the craft and practice to get better, Absolutely. The same as with barbering and being able to cut, you gotta, like, for the advice for the guy who's fresh into the barbershop, got his first chair.
I got you.
He's not getting a lot of customers, but what's the advice that you would give him as far as if he does get his first two and it's not good cuts, how does he not hit that wall and quit? Like, what is the advice you would give him to kind of get him pushing past that limit?
To be honest with you, it really falls back on the character of the person. If you're dealing with a quitter from the jump, then it doesn't matter what you do or say.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's the passion.
Right.
I love what I do so much that I accepted going through the mistakes. You're going to have to make the mistakes to be able to know what you're doing in the first place. Nobody gets it right off the jump. I messed up a lot of people's heads. But along with messing up heads, I acquired the ability to fix heads.
Yes.
You understand what I'm saying? Yep. Even though I messed something up, I learned how to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
I actually built a skill from it, actually, to be honest with you. Oh, it's just a thing of just being consistent. Stay consistent. Keep your pride and your morale up. The way you want people to look, you got to carry yourself that same way.
Is there any...
Just keep going. Keep doing it. Keep doing. Practice makes perfect.
Right. Yeah, and that's important. The practice is very important. Outside of that, is there anybody that you looked up to as far as once you got into the game of barbering that you said, I want to take this thing to the next level? Is there anybody in the barber industry that barbers look up to for mentorship? Is there anybody you can be like, all right, this dude, he's cold. Like, is there an industry for the barbers that they look up for certain people?
There are barbers who become somewhat like a celebrity. They become famous because of social media.
Right.
I'm not a trendy cat. I'm not much of a follower. I respect the game, though. Credit is given where credit is due. I see lots of barbers out there, but I will say that this business has been exploited much. It's become not for all. Like I say to some people, there's a lot of people that can cut hair, but not all of them are barbers.
Yeah, that's the big talk about the difference between the two. What's the difference between you cut hair and you're a barber?
Like, okay, for example, if you go on social media, looking at some of these barbers on social media, a lot of them are more in tune with the image of a barber.
Yep.
The lifestyle.
The portrayal.
Exactly. The reputation we have. It's not really per se what they want to do for that person. It's really what this whole industry is doing for them.
Right.
You got the showboats.
The looks.
You know what I mean? Exactly. Whereas a person who's just, this is what they do, this is their passion, all of that is irrelevant. It's really irrelevant. We all work to make money. That's a given. I'm not doing this for the money. That's right. Natural. We all work for money. That's not something special that you're working for money. That's what we all do. It's what this job or what this business does for me personally. I can be in the worst mood or just be feeling down or having a horrible day. And being able to maybe change someone else's energy because of that haircut or the conversation they spent, that time they spent with me, being able to change that, being able to move that in a positive direction, or seeing them get up and walk out with a smile on their face. I've seen people, even kids, walk in that shop like, this is the last place I want to be.
Yeah,
I don't even feel like being like the worst or whatever they got going on the outside. They bring that energy in there with them. All right. Sit down. They might even talk to you, might even have a conversation.
Yep.
Some of them have that conversation, but they might even have a conversation. You sit there and give them that nice, clean cut. And as soon as they take that mirror and look at themselves, their whole demeanor, energy, everything changes. That is remarkable to me.
Yeah, that is.
That's probably the most remarkable thing in this business that I can attach myself to. Is the reaction I get from the people when I'm done doing my work.
Man, that's beautiful, bro. And that's really how all of our stories come together to provide the transition.
Right.
We'll talk about the transition right now as far as, you know, fatherhood, being a single black father in America, but absolutely. Also being a passionate entrepreneur.
Absolutely.
And let's talk about how to balance the two of those as far as mentality, how you prepare your family for the future, but also where we are as a culture. We talk about a lot of times, a lot of the foolery that's going on the internet, the influence and the propaganda towards our culture and how certain entities are distracting our youth to go left, right, back, forth, and never into the center. And let's transition into the fatherhood. Let's transition into the society of where we are currently with young black kids being influenced in a different way that we were brought up. We're not going to say that it's bad or good, but we just say it's different because we can't be biased when it comes to that. Let's talk about fatherhood for you, bro. Let's talk about what it means to not only be an entrepreneur, but a father that's trying to make a way for his kids today.
I get it. I will start off by saying this. I am the fatherless father. I was the one who grew up without a father. I take the good out of that and try to run with that. Being the father that I am, because I didn't have a father, made me being a father the most important thing that I can do in my life. I take fatherhood very serious. Majority of the people that know me do know that about me. That's the one thing I take very serious is my father. I'm a five-time daddy. I have two grown adults. My son is 29, about to be a fireman. Got to give him a shout out because my man is doing it.
Shout out to the fireman, little young gas.
You dig? My daughter's 26. She got three kids. She's a really damn good mother. I have three younger children I'm dealing with now. 14 and 13-year-old girls and my 11-year-old son. It's the most rewarding thing I have ever been involved in my entire life. They are the most important thing to me. They are the driving force in me. I see within my own life, my own eyes, how detrimental the lack of fathering has done to our community. It's had a profound effect on us, men and women. There is a balance when it comes to raise child. Women can't do it by themselves. Men can't do it by themselves. We are supposed to do it together. That's the most natural thing that a man and woman can do is raise a child together. For some reason, powers that be, they didn't want to see us in that realm, in that light. They did. They worked their voodoo. They worked their voodoo and disturbed us. But it's up to us as fathers. I'm not a father to my children. I am a father.
So and that means a lot. We have to explain that.
Has to do with fathering.
Let's unpack that. Let's unpack that real quick.
I get that. I get it.
Let's unpack. I'm a father, not just to my, not to just my kids.
Right.
I'm a father to all.
All kids. Now, and the reason why I say that is because us in the Black community, one thing we did in our community was we looked out for each other. You couldn't go down the street around the corner to the park and act a fool without someone's parent saying something to you.
Culture.
Actually dealing with you. They always say it takes a village to raise a child. We have somehow forgotten that. I believe instead of, like, one thing I see that we're doing, instead of, like, in the old days, an elder would stand up when it came to dealing with a child. Whereas nowadays, we got elders who pick up their phone to record that child instead of saying something.
Wow.
Why do we have so much video of people acting up?
Man, no correction. And you think back on how we were raised, man. Like you said, when we were raised, we emulated more of our ancient culture than we did the modern culture because, like Absolutely. You said, it took the tribe. When we were in the hood, you around the corner, my mom at work, my daddy at work, but Miss Lorraine down the street that sell the ices put me in my place. And then went up to my house when my mama came home and told my mama, I seen your son. I had to set him straight. And I let that. Yeah, he did this. He did that. And now I get a second whooping.
Yep.
From a mama.
Yep. Absolutely.
And everything was cool. We wasn't tripping. Nobody was tripping. Okay. We just knew we couldn't be bad around Miss Lorraine no more.
There was more love without even us realizing it. There was more love in our community than we are today. Because I was around back then, I could see the difference of where we are today. We're a long way from where we should be, but not too far for us to reach out and grab it.
Right. Because we've seen it. We've seen it before. We know what it feels like, but it's just like this generation and our mentorship from our generation, we're not taking the accountability that our elders took for us.
Absolutely.
When it was go outside, get that switch. Exactly. You about to get a whooping. I watched people raise their kids in a way where I'm like, your kid can talk to you like that?
Oh my God. It's being in this barber business. Another thing. I see it on the regular. We parents, I wasn't raised on negotiating with my parents.
Never.
There was no such thing as negotiations. Like, I'm saying, it wasn't a democracy. It was a dictatorship.
You barely got to ask questions, period.
Right? A side eye was getting knocked out.
Halfway through the question, you get the side eye to shut up.
Come on now. Like, I mean, but I think the thing is with us today is we have a lot of people that are judgmental. Everybody's pointing fingers, critiquing, everybody's criticizing, but we're not hearing resolutions. We're relying on the government to do certain things for us, but government is not into resolving.
No.
And then we're talking about family issues. No one can resolve family issues but family.
That's it.
Our family extends outside of our household. The support we should be getting should be coming from ourselves.
Yes.
It's not an outside source. Outside source is not going to fix what's indoors. It's just not going to happen. It's an in-house issue, like we say. In-house situation. A Black man's issue needs to be dealt with by Black men.
Man. And we don't understand that.
And we don't understand it.
As Black men, we've gotten away from It's just like when you raising your kids and you want to spank your kids in the store now. Everyone now second guesses it because you got
everyone does.
You got the child protective services. Right. And you're right. Like, man, I can't even whoop my kids' ass the way. Right. Even the kids are getting smart to the point right. where you can't discipline them without them saying, "I'll tell my teacher."
Wait. Hey, but check this out though. You ever notice the black women got that look? I've been in public with my grandparents, with my grandma, with auntie, a female elder, and they didn't want to grab that belt or snatch us up, but they gave us a look. Clear across that fucking room, they gave us this look, and you knew, like, if I don't stop now, I'm going to get that snatching. Like, they're going to snatch me if I don't stop now.
And we're in this
look
room.
Was serious as ever. That was a serious piercing
look.
Oh,
yeah. But we're in this room. I can't be whooped in this room because the people in here are important and I don't want them to look at me crazy. But the look I'm giving you from across the room is when we get in the car.
Absolutely.
When nobody's around.
With nobody around.
Your ass is mine.
You ain't kidding. That's exactly what it is. We lost that. But like I said, resolution. We're not dealing with the same type of man or woman or child today no more. We are looking at things, we should be dealing with things differently.
Like you say,
we can't grab the whip and the switch and do all this no more. We got to come up with a resolution. We got to come up with another way to deal with ourselves. We can come up out of this shit.
Well, you brought a great point when you said father. I'm a father, not just a father to my kids. And that says a lot in this instance, because if I walk in the room, like currently, if I'm around another person's kid,
right,
and they doing stuff that I'm looking at the parents like, hey, what you just gonna let them? Okay, now I have to be a father.
Absolutely.
I have to now show them that what you're doing is not cool. Even if your mama ain't never said nothing about this not being cool. Come here, let me tell you why this is not cool.
Exactly. And that's an obligation.
It is. And if you're a man and part of your accountability to correct when you see it, it's not judgment. And I think that that's where we're becoming to get. We're trying to see the gray line between judgment and correction. When you correct someone, they're doing wrong already.
Exactly.
And judgment, you don't know what's going on. It's just in the air. Like, I'm not going to judge you because I don't know.
I agree.
Correction, you're doing it the wrong way. Let me correct you.
Well, correction comes from love from the beginning. I don't care about something, I ain't thinking about correct. I don't care. Let them be.
Right.
But I care about myself. I care about my community. I care about my children. I care about the world that my kids are going to be living in. I mean, like I said, being a father does not stop in my household. We as a nation of people need to be fathers. We've been getting mothered for how long now?
Man, don't go into that. Ooh, he gonna go into
we've
that.
We've been getting mothered for a long time. Now
we're gonna go into that. We talking about fatherhood. You don't bring any women into this.
You know how it go. I'm not here to down nobody. I'm here to uplift my people.
Let's bring them into it.
I want to uplift everybody. But we've been raised by the woman for a while now.
Yep.
Not to downplay the woman, because the woman has to do the job that she's allotted to do. Yep. I get it, and it's understandable. Just like if it was on the man, he can't do it himself. Although we are expected to do it by ourselves now. Being a single father, being a single mother, I get it. Yep. It's out there. But the role of the father has to be highlighted.
Yes.
I wasn't raised with the mother and the father. I was raised with my grandparents. Although I had a man and a woman example in my life, they weren't my mother and father.
Right.
As far as what I had to learn about being a father, I had to pick it up watching other people that were fathers, paying attention to them guys who did have a daddy. Although it was rare in my circle of friends, I noticed it. To me, it stood out. I was never ashamed to ask the question, whether it was about a person and their fathering, or I ask an old man, you've been married for 30 something years, 40 years. How'd you do it?
Right.
Answers come from questions.
Absolutely.
If we start to ask these questions and put these questions out, eventually the answers are going to start coming.
Well, you think about this too. You said we've been pacified by the woman for so long, and it has a lot to do with the nurturing effect with
Absolutely.
the millennials today.
Absolutely.
They are being over pacified and told
Absolutely.
to be overly emotional and so on and so forth.
Absolutely.
And what
Straight
that
out the
does
balcony.
is it interferes with fatherhood.
Absolutely. There's
When
no
you, as a
balance.
mother, you're over nurturing. It's like when you see females with dogs. I see this all the time. The dog can't be tough if you always
Hugging his kids. He can't protect you. You're
can't
right.
protect you because he's
You're
soft and all he know
right.
is. But
You're
then
right.
when the robber come in, he
Right.
gonna go up to the robber like he come up to you.
You're absolutely right.
I want to kiss you, I want to love you, I want to do all that. And now it's
Absolutely
like,
right.
okay, the same thing happens with the son without the father. The mother is saying you would be, it's okay to show your emotions, it's okay to be vulnerable and all that. Then the robber comes in the house.
Absolutely.
You want to talk to him.
There's a need for the man. There's a need for the man. And it goes back to this, though. You got to be a good man in order to play that role, to take on that role. You just can't be any man and take on that role. You got to be a decent man, just like a woman has to be a decent woman in order to take on that role.
You're right.
It is a job, and it is a job that does require skills
And preparation.
and preparation. That's something we don't do, neither is when it comes to being parents. We don't prepare. We just go along with it. We just do. These are issues that we probably do need to talk more about amongst each other as men. And I don't mean it's as older men, younger guys, these younger dudes that are not fathers yet, that are still in school, still dealing with social issues and still dealing with their emotions and still dealing with anger. Those are the ones that we need to talk to and deal with. If we're going to get together and have these conversations with each other as men, then the resolution has to come with it. And we got to bring that resolution to the rest of the community. But it is a
Man.
joint effort. We have to do this together. I can't do it by myself. I mean, I can father my children by myself, but as far as being a father to community, we all need to get together to do this. We all do. I'm game for it. Like, I was around when that was a reality. I don't see it as something that is not tangible.
Right.
It's something that can be recreated. We just have to jump on it and do it. Marcus Garvey believed we could have another home somewhere else.
Yeah.
He didn't just believe it. He went out and did it.
Man.
So, I mean, we can talk. We've been actually, to be honest with you, we've been talking about this shit since the 80s. It's 2021 now. We got to get these resolutions together and start making action.
For sure, bro.
We are losing ourselves to the world, and the
That's
world is actually
unfortunate.
capitalizing off of us. We got to take control of that. Take control. Take it back. We have to. We are
So,
not. We're not a full, complete man today.
no.
We're not. We're like a man in progress.
And that's what that's what our podcast is about, bro. It's about transition, transformation, and transcendence.
I
And that's
get
where
it.
we want to end the conversation is we usually ask our guests what those three words mean when you hear them.
Right.
For you, what does transition mean when you hear the word transition?
Like you said, first thing, preparation, transition, prepare for change, be willing to accept the change, especially if it's in a positive light. What we're talking about is a positive transition. Transition is not something a lot of us are being taught to not accept change. When it comes to making a transition, a lot of us are caught up and comfortable in the life that we're living, that we're fearful of transition, even when the transition could be something that's been. Now we're at the point where fear is not a factor no more. We got to get past all that.
Right.
The stigmas, we get past all that. And like I said, come up with a resolution and move forward on that resolution. We don't need governments. We don't need presidents. We don't need politicians. We need black men and black women to stand up and do what we're supposed to do as men, as women, as parents, as citizens in this crazy country. Let's do it ourselves.
Second word, transformation. What does that mean when you hear that word?
I think the first thing that comes to my mind is a butterfly. That's the first thing probably when you say that. It's a butterfly. Butterfly transforms into a whole nother creature. And the transformation itself is ugly. If you watch a caterpillar changing, it's ugly. Yeah. It looks gross.
Yeah.
But then once he gets through that transformation, the wings pop out and you just in awe of how beautiful of what you just looked at come into light.
Yeah.
I believe that's how we need to look at it. We're caterpillars right now trying to transform into butterflies. The transformation is real.
Yeah.
It can be as real as we make it.
All right, the last one. Transcendence. What does transcendence mean to you when you hear it?
That's all elevation.
Mm.
That's all elevation. And I see the order you put it in. And that's the order it should be in. Because once you transform, you transcend. Like I said with the butterfly, it all plays its part. When some wings grow, I could fly now.
Mm-hmm.
We will be those butterflies in the world. We are the butterflies of the world. We're just not. What's crazy is that the world sees our beauty.
Yes.
They see our beauty. They see our talent. They see our skills. They see our beauty. The thing is that they know how to capitalize on top of it.
They know how to keep us. They know how to keep us in caterpillar form.
Exactly. The beautiful caterpillar, right? Without us having no form of control over any of it. We're in a different world, though. With this world, like you said, transcending. We need to transcend into the top tier where we're the ones who are benefiting off of who we are. Everybody can benefit off what we do because what we do is for the world. Like I say, your talents aren't for you. Your talents are for other people to enjoy.
Absolutely.
But if I was a poet and I write a poem down, that poem is not for myself.
No.
That poem is for the world to enjoy. The talents and skills that we have, the God in us is for the world's enjoyment. We just have to take control of it.
Man. Well, hey, everybody here first, Mr. James Gaston got a message for you.
Absolutely. Every day.
And that message is not far off at all from the message that we talk about every single episode, and that is the transition, the transform, and the transcend. And every transition takes that first step. That first step is called preparation. That second step in your transformation is realizing that you have to become something else.
That's right.
Now, once you become something else, you get to be that something else. Absolutely. You have become it. Now you're sitting here in this vessel and you're trying to figure out how it works. Now, once you figure out how it works, you can be it. That's transcendence.
It's natural.
Transcendence. And I want to thank James for coming on this podcast today, man, and expressing and sharing his testimonies with us and being able to be open and honest.
Very.
Not only about the life of being a barber, but also fatherhood, man, which is very important. And we're going to bring him back because we got to unpack some music. We're going to impact sports. You know what I'm saying? Absolutely. We might even bring another one of our homies on in the barbershop to come through and participate in the conversation and make it a real live one. You know what I'm saying? But
we got you.
In closing, I want to thank James again for coming onto the podcast. Do you have any social media links that you want to share with the audience? They can reach out to you, pick your brain, anything like that?
Yeah, do that. My social media is just like me. It is a reflection of me. I'm not on there posting all the wild and crazy stuff. It's basically educational. I'm very historic, very spiritual, very much into politics. Although I don't follow politics, I stay aware.
Right.
And my Instagram page is Mr. Shiesty, MISTASHYSTI. That Barber_That Barber.
Yep.
My Facebook is under my name, James Gaston, GASTON. Look me up. Follow me. Check me out.
Man,
I'm always going to be here till the casket drop.
Till the casket drop. And we are out of here. This is your boy, Rashad McKansas. This is the Transition Podcast, man to God. And until next time.
Absolutely. Peace out.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Transition Podcast. To learn more about how to transition in life from normal to extraordinary, follow Rashad McCants on Instagram @IAmRashadMcCants.